You dickheads.
Welcome to episode 40 of Double Dodge. This one we're going to call Diggy Diggy Hole. And basically that's because we had the pleasure of interviewing a couple of our good friends, one of which was Mr. Steve Beeston, and the other one, a Martin Koch. I'm not sure I pronounced that correctly, but I just didn't want to offend him. And we thought we'd have a chat to them after Vengeance. There's a lot of stuff that's basically come out recently. And we thought it would be a good idea to have a look at that, analyse that, and see where they kind of sat on it. So Steve obviously took out the aforementioned Vengeance, and Martin, I think, went 6-1. So between them won a shit ton of games. So have a reasonably good idea of how the kind of the meta's evolving and the game. You'll also notice that my good friend David is not on the line with us at the moment. I'm flying solo, so he won't be with us. But we'll endeavour to get through and jump straight on into this episode. All right.
This one's an advert for Patreon.
Or something similar that Campbell or Dave might say. Hello, how are you? I'm English, in case you can't tell. Patreon, that's a thing. It's very handy. It allows content creators, like these two idiots, to carry on doing stuff. Because remarkably, podcasting isn't free to make. To listen to, it is. But through the power of Patreon, it cannot be. Hooray! So if you want to make something that was free, now cost you money, here is an ample opportunity to do so. So for $1, they'll shout at you. Who wouldn't want that? For $5, you get the HI Fish Positive reward, which you get sent the Double Dodge widget, which is pretty good, I have to say. Love the material that it's made out of. You may have noticed it on my YouTube channel a few times if you watch that. If you haven't, you should, but I'm not going to plug my own stuff on somebody else's channel. That seems rude. Otherwise, you can go for the choo-choo, which is exactly the same as the HI Fish Positive. That's kind of swearing, not really swearing though. Rewards as well, but you get a stubby holder, which is their day job, or Campbell's day job, as I understand it. So there you go, who wouldn't want any of that? Double Dodge, light singled out, but funnier.
So on the line, we have two of our favourite people. One of them is the original Patient Zero. He keeps going back for more, though, as much as I believe he has a badge from a different guild on Longshanks. Mr. Martin Koch, how are you, sir?
I'm very good. How are you?
Very good, very good. We love having you on, as always. The other is a bad man, I think, for playing miners. I think he should feel bad. He should definitely feel bad. But this man's just come from smashing everyone at the largest tournament in the world, Mr. Stephen Easton. How are you, sir?
I'm good, thank you. Good morning. How are you?
Very good, very good. Sorry, is it Stephen? Stevie's? What's the best way to, like, you know?
Whatever. It's Stephen, but whatever.
Beeston? Oh, I like that. Okay. What's your mum call you?
Well, it depends what I've done.
Okay, fair. And as always, David, my partner in crime, he likes to swing on in on a Sunday night and just chat. He does all the work and I just make this shit up. David, how are you?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. I can't believe we're still doing this.
I know. It's a very shit show. Uh-huh. So we thought we'd get to the highest, highly top 10 ranked players in the world online and have a chat to them. Not only because collectively I think they won, what, if I can do my maths, 13 out of 14 games at Vengeance, but also because they're good blokes. And we thought we'd have a bit of a chat about Vengeance, but also just generally about how the meta's unfolding with the new errata that's just come out and the miners that have come out. So I guess to kick it off, maybe we do a little bit of a recap of Vengeance. It is the biggest tournament in the world. I'd love to get there simply to go, maybe 1-6. Steve, can you give us a rundown of, you know, how it kind of how it rolled out for you on the weekend, mate?
Yeah, sure. I played a few games that week with Miners. I had about 7 practice games on the Thursday and the Friday because I went to Vengeance early. Trying them into different stuff because obviously local meta is fairly small and they haven't been out that long. And then I was pretty confident, won all my games. I managed to play Mr. Charles Nursa on the Friday evening as well as a practice on stream, which was quite nice. And that was an interesting game. And then Saturday morning came around and I got drawn against one of the Scottish guys playing Steeljaw and never played against her. So that was an interesting game and went fairly okay. I missed a 5 dice tap in to go 12.
Classic Easton.
What is the pass on that? That is brutal.
So in return, he's captured the grand slam too. So yeah, it's like less than 1%.
I actually would have pulled up the app at that point because GB Manager puts it down as 100%, mate. So I just would have turned around and gone, no, have a look at the app. It says it's not. Don't even roll dice.
It was a really interesting game though. Like seeing all the traps everywhere and things was actually. You know, it looked a really fun list to play. He was playing as well. So I was feeling pretty good after that. And then I got drawn against Timmy round 2. And I was like, typical bullshit. Like the way that my rounds get paired up against. I always get like Fraser or Timmy or someone really, really top ranked round 2 in any event. And Timmy was playing Falconers. He'd done a Twitter poll. And obviously that was the team that was picked for him. So hadn't played against the new Falcons at all since the errata went into it. And it was actually pretty good, apart from the start. I went in with Mule onto Divana, who had the ball, looking for the knockdown on one hit. Managed to miss all of them. He then counterattacked, hit all of them, and pushed Mule into 3 crowds and proceeded to 1-round Mule in his turn to go 2-0 up.
Oh, is Mule not like one of the hardest models to kill in the game?
Yeah, 3-2, 16 boxes, tough hide, Amrion. I was like, oh, that's a pretty shit start against someone like Timmy as well. That was pretty, pretty bad. So I literally got up and I had gave myself a moment to just be like, right, okay, it's fine. And then I just banged some goals in and won 12-6 in the end.
Nice.
So mine obviously put a lot of ball pressure on, so that's, you know, and Falcons can't really hide the ball.
Yep.
Yeah.
My third game was on stream against a guy called Adam Hansel playing Captain Boar. And I played one game against Boar against Florian on the Thursday or the Friday. So I kind of knew what he did, but he's just all manner of bullshit. You guys will get to watch that, I'm sure. But yeah, it was the amount of damage that team can put out is just ridiculous. I did have one kind of moment I was quite happy with in the game where I managed to use Fuse to place one of his models who had the ball behind his own line, so he couldn't generate momentum for the entire turn.
Nice.
Yeah, so 13 points he couldn't spend effectively, and I was, you know, didn't get any reward for it. I was like, that's fine. And that set me up for winning the turn to leverage that start of the next turn into a goal to win the game. So I was quite happy with that. And at that point, Kane, we had one more game on the day, for Saturday. And I got a Masons player, Alistair, who picked a bit of a strange lineup for, as far as I was concerned. He picked Hammer, Wrecker, who else did he pick? Vet Harmony, Vet Chisel, Granite, I think the other one was maybe Flint, I can't remember. Oh no, Mallet. It was Mallet. And it was just a bit, for me, it was a bit of a weird lineup. I played quite a lot of Masons, and that was a fairly comfortable game. Went 12-2.
Nice.
So that was the end of day one, and looking at who was left for day two, undefeated, it was a veritable shark tank of top ranked players, to be honest. Start of the next day, I got Charles again, which was good.
What? Because he was
cards for the game.
Was he still hurting from the beating you gave him the day before? Or?
I was actually a bit more worried because we had the game on Friday and he'd been thinking all weekend about how to play into mines and how to beat me. So he said he had all this secret tech to play against me, and I was like, I don't know what he's going to do now. And the jank with order is super legit. You know, the movement shenanigans you can pull off, especially if you're a good player. It was a fairly comfortable game. You know, it was very tactical, but it ended 12-4. And when he made one mistake at the start, which kind of cost him. I think he charged, missed in from kickoff into Shaft, and Shaft had the ball, and he didn't bonus time it. And if he'd have bonus timed it, he was likely to hit the wrap, which would be the tackle double dodge away from my counter, and then potentially had the goal on to go 4-0 up early on. But instead, missed, whiffed it, and just got beaten by my team when I scored, so to go an early lead. I think Alistair was playing Fraser at that point, and Bryce was playing a Alchemist player, which is really good
for Farmers. Dan Best.
Yes, yeah, really, really good for Farmers. You know, it's a pretty comfortable matchup with all the condition clearing. Yeah. I'm kind of glad that Fraser and Alistair were playing, because I didn't really want two Blacksmiths to be getting through, because I think that's a hard matchup for Miners with all the armor.
Yeah,
Iron killing the ball in Sentinel range in cover with potentially Burnish sitting there as well. So the next game was against Fraser on stream as well. It was a pretty close game, actually. Although the score ended 12-6, Fraser and I talked about it afterwards, and if he positioned slightly differently with Sledge, he had a potential win on the table to actually beat me. I charged Fuse into Sledge, who had the ball, and I luckily wrapped for the knockdown tackle. But I was, I think there was a bit of stuff on Discord about it, and they're like, oh, it's like a 27% chance of it happening. But I wasn't actually going for that play. I was just literally looking for the knockdown for the ball to scatter, to then remote kick it either into the goal or back into my lines to put it into play.
Yeah, absolutely. Depending on which way it goes, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and whether I had the place on Fuse still to use. So as long as the ball ended anywhere, in fact, wherever the ball ended, as long as it was on a player, I could have kicked it, because I could have jumped to Anvil or repositioned the other side of Sledge to actually kick it. Nice. But yeah, the tackle knocked down, then I placed into Anvil and scored the goal. I was so focused on the knockdown, though, that I actually made the mistake, because I had wrapped, I had a momentous tackle and a momentous double push, double dodge.
And I've just done that, yeah.
Yeah, and because I was focused on the knock, and because that's what my plan was, I actually made that mistake and chose that result instead.
Come on, man.
Let's get good.
Accurate.
I've played Fraser a lot. Most events we go to, we end up playing each other at some point. Went to Belgian Nationals and I lost one round and he won it. Most events that we're both at, we end up getting a game in. And then final game was against Bryce, right, who had managed to beat Bet Boer, I think, in the previous round, Captain Boer. Yeah. And I was dreading this game, because Farmers have quite a lot of ways of moving the ball around quite fast, and the damage output from Thresher now with the buff is stupid. And I remember in one turn, Bryce managed to kill two players with Thresher, you know, easily. I think it was two tough hide players as well. But it ended up being 12-6. We both had a couple of breaks during the game, because obviously it was end of the day. It was quite a long weekend, quite stressful. So they actually did call time on the game, but we continued to play because we're like, what's the final? It was 10-6 at that point to me anyway. I'd won the initiative, and I actually had a couple of different ways of winning the game. So I had Farmers with the claws.
Windle,
thank you, Martin. Yes. So Windle was on 18 health, crowded out, and I had the singled out card on him. So I could have killed him with Shaft first activation, or I could have pushed him off the board relatively easily, or I could have gone for the goal. And Thresher had the ball, so tackle push off Thresher, charge Windle for the knockdown, and then beat on him a bit and then scored the goal to win. Took me 2 minutes of my extra time, but I knew it would win me the game, so And that was it.
Seven games done.
Well done, mate. Well done. That's awesome. Hey, as a follow-up question, would you say on a scale of okay to bullshit that it's pretty bullshit that you can build a guild to suit your own tastes? you know, how do you feel about that without, you know, without wanting to implicate anybody in particular? Because I've heard tell that you know, one of these blokes playing farmers is you know, he might have a bit of an inside run.
Maybe. I mean, I heard a rumor that Thresh is like, based on his dad. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Man. Man.
I personally don't get the Thresh in that the Thresher buff. Like Grange, I thought Grange was fine anyway, but he's really good now. And the idea was to make him more playable. And then obviously if you do that and then buff the other captain even more, he's just going to not be played again. So I'm a bit confused, but maybe it's the stuff coming out down the line.
Yeah, look, we're all confused, man. We're all confused. There's no shame in that. But well done. Vengeance is a huge win. Steve.
That was I've been to everyone, and I've gone 6-1 a couple of times. But, yeah, really happy. Thank you.
Right. And I hear you, I hear that there's nuptials in the offing that you got proposed to.
No, there's not.
All right.
Anna did come and propose to me with a gaffer tape ring as soon as I'd won. But I'm not sure how serious she was being, but I was a bit surprised.
Mate, I reckon if you'd said yes, it'd be on.
Probably.
I like to travel for weddings, so you know, keep us in the loop.
I'm still waiting for the invite.
Your invite will be in the post, no doubt.
No doubt. Martin, how was your vengeance?
Oh, my vengeance started, I think it was Friday morning, 3:00, because we have to get from Germany over to Manchester. It was okay. We arrived something like 1:00, and my plan was to play UKE this weekend because I wanted to ride the Dark Horse. But I made, I think it was 4 practice games, and I just went 2-2. And in the evening, I talked a little bit to my German guys, and yeah, finally made the decision. No, UKE, I have not enough practice. And I picked up Corsair and Shark to just go the old ways because I went to the Belgium Nets. I played Steve there and Fraser, and I wasn't happy with my game plan, with my playing when I didn't have the ball, because it's pretty tough for Masons to get the ball. And to change this, I got back to Fish. Yeah, and were pretty good. I could play Shark for 7 games, and Shark has no problem to get the ball. He doesn't care if he's kicking or receiving.
Just tell us how you sharked everyone. You played Shark all 7 rounds.
Yes, I did.
I can't lie. I was slightly sad because the conversation you and I had before this was that you were going to play Yukai, and yeah.
Look, I'm not going to lie, Martin. I'm a little disappointed in you, but I understand that addiction's a very difficult thing. So, you know, I'm not going to throw stones here.
Yeah. It's good and very nice of you that you're accepting my problem and my addiction. So
we're here for you, man. We want to help you. We want to help you through this.
Oh, that's so nice of you. At the first game, I played one of the German guys. He played Blacksmith, and I think I can't play Corsair into them because I can't fight them. And especially, it's hard to take them off. So I played Shark. And basically, I was done with Vengeance in this game because I was down 4-8. I got the ball, but I needed to score. He had got an activation in between. My task was to get the ball back and scored another goal, and luckily I managed to get this, so I could score 2 goals in a row. He played pretty good, and I think, to be fair, he deserved to win, because in the end the ball was on Iron in Sentinel range, and Shark could go in, and I've got a bonus time on Anvil, and I hit all 7 dice, so I could push dodge Anvil away, and Iron was not base to base with him, so Sentinel was gone, and then Shark could steal the ball from Iron and sink in the goal for the 12-8. But to be fair, I would say it was his game. I was very, very lucky.
Maybe you can help Steve out with that in the future. He has some pretty horrid dice luck. So maybe you could start a clinic or something. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll talk about this after this. This is something good.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Sorry, man. Sorry. Keep going.
No problem. There's the second round. I played Jamie Brewster. He was playing Alchemist, and he played a lineup without enough hitting power. I think he played just Mercury and Crucible and all the guys who wanted to steal the ball, but no Catalyst. So I just ran my Fisherman in, scored 3 goals, and he couldn't really slow me down because I have nothing to fear, no one to kill Shark. All the conditions are annoying, but they are not bursting someone away. And if you have enough momentum, you can heal the condition, heal your player. And Fathom obviously is really, really nice with the Smelling Salt. She's helping a lot in this matchup.
Absolutely. So no, he didn't take any hitting power. Like, he obviously took Smoke, I would assume.
Yes, I think it was Smoke, Naga, Crucible, Venom, Mercury, and I think the last guy was Compound, if I remember correctly. I think it was his lineup.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I managed to win this one. The next round was again another German. He played Brewers. He had to kick the ball to me, and I think Brewers still a bad matchup into Fisherman, so I could pretty easy score 3 goals. He tried. He got with a new stave, but I think because he picked Stave, that was why I win the game, because he's just a momentum bank for me. Put so much momentum for him. And to be fair, I think he was throwing 2 or 3 barrels, and every barrel missed. So, it didn't pay off for him. And the last game of day one, I played one of the French guys, Blacksmith again, so I think I have to play Shark again. I got the ball again, scored my first goal. He took out Shark, and then I think he made a mistake letting me go first, and Shark could come in on the corner into fast ground, stealing the ball again, scoring another goal. So I was up 8-2. I could legendary basically everybody, and then the Fisher just swung the Blacksmith.
That sounds like an absolute nightmare. That's fantastic. Yeah, so he won initiative, but
yes,
let you go first.
Yes.
So at that point, probably just didn't read the table correctly and understanding how far you could come in, I guess.
Yeah, I would agree. So that was day one, and I was pretty lucky to get into day two like last year. And as Steve already told you, it was a pretty big Shark tank, so there are no more easy games. The next game on Sunday was on stream. I played another French guy. He played, I think it was Veteran Boar. I could go up 4-0, and then he killed the ball, killed some of my players. I could go for another goal. And then I made 2 or 3 slight mistakes. Maybe I was too aggressive. But I had I think it was 3 chances to win the game, and he was a good player, but the problem was, from my opinion, he left the door open for me very, very long. And so I've got more chances, but I wasn't lucky. So in the end, won 8-12, but it's okay. I was so deep in the thinking tank with my options that I made a snapshot with Grayscale, only rolling 2 dice because I passed the ball with Fathom and had these 2 dice in my hands and didn't know that Grayscale had 3 dice. So it was such mistakes. You are not deserve to win the game. So,
no, I don't know. It's an interesting game. I watched that one on stream live, and it was a really good game. Obviously, I was rooting for you. And yeah, you could see kind of moments of like stress or pressure when, you know, both of you were making kind of decisions and you're thinking, oh, is that quite right? There was also an interaction before this, and I know I've asked you about it, where we were eyeing off whether Fathom could get in, get the ball, and get it to grayscales. I think it was the turn before, and I think you measured it out, and it was just out. I reckon that would have been crucial. If you could have got the ball to grayscales at that point, then, you know, you had grayscale scoring.
Yes. Yes, I think that was a little bit unlucky. I needed one net hit more so I could go for the tackle double dodge, and I think then she would be in range, and three dice needing just one four with rerolls is a way better chance than a 50-50 tap in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. The next game was, I was pretty disappointed. Obviously, no one likes to lose. I played another German guy. He played UK. He tried the UK thing, was bringing a player basically in front of your goal, but his dice let him down. Nothing worked for him, so I could score another goal, and in the end, Shark managed to get the ball, slowed down basically the whole team, and the ball was on Grayscale. And Grayscale's head, he could go in base to base with goal, and I had to plus one kick card, and I've got four shots on goal, so basically 16 dice needing 1-3 for the win. Grayscale managed to get this. And the last game,
continue.
Okay. And the last game was against Michael Cumber. I received again, scored a goal. I think he made a little mistake with his momentum, and my last activation, I was able to knock down Divana and push her out of range of her Harrier AoEs. So she couldn't do anything, so the momentum race was 0-0 after round one. I had a 7, was lucky, could go with Shark again, legendary the whole team, score another goal. Then the kickoff went pretty bad for him, so my siren could go. He couldn't reach the ball, so my siren could go. Fair wins the ball, passed to Shark, and he scored the tap-in for 12-0, so I beat him in basically 8 activations.
Oh, 8 activations. I love it. I mean, it's kind of sad, but I know Dave's throwing up in the corner just listening to this.
Oh, disgusted. I can't. I can't even speak.
Nice. Look, you know, at the end of the day, you're only going to get one player that goes undefeated. So that's a pretty good standing, 6-1 in biggest tournament in the world. It's pretty impressive.
Mate. Super respectable. Yeah. No, well done. Well done. Any big takeaways from the new meta, like to both of you? Anything that jumps out at you?
Martin, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I can go first. Obviously, because of the new captain, every Butcher player was excited of playing Veteran War, and I totally get this. New toys and very, very brutal and shiny toys, and he's obviously pretty strong. So I think every Butcher player played Veteran War. I would say he was maybe the most played captain during this tournament, but I get this totally. Can look it up. It was a lot of Butcher players, maybe because of that. And the new miners were a lot of there was because they were new, and I think they're pretty good. Do we have? Yeah, Butchers were 13 players played Butchers, and 7 players played miners, and I think that's pretty. That's a lot for a minor guild and a relatively new guild. So I think that were the two things about the meta, but I totally understand why players play a lot of Veteran Boar and a lot of miners.
Do you have any thoughts on Vet Boar? Like, how do you find him? Do you rate him?
I think he's okay, but he has no gotchas. You can see him coming when you could blind him or set him on fire or gold him or UK's placement effect. I think he will get a little bit worse and worse over time when people know how to deal with him.
Yeah. I mean, a Shark legendary first activation is always pretty brutal.
Yes.
Yeah, he's not going anywhere, and you can push him around. So you could even just total surge him back if you really needed to. So.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd have to be a monster to do that, though, poor boar. I don't know why you would be that way inclined. Man, fish players, let me just say this. fish players, you know, they come across as nice and friendly, you know, ball playing guild, just want to have fun. Evil, the lot of them. Don't trust them. They spread HI fish positive, as we know. Steve, do you have any thoughts about the new meta?
I think the new captains in general are really interesting. Morn in particular is obviously very polarizing. It's a captain that looks like on paper it only does one thing, which is anti-fighting teams. And obviously if you're playing a high scoring, high tempo team, perhaps less effective. I suppose that's countered by your other captain, Obelus. Some interesting pairings maybe for Hunters and for Yukai. And Yukai looks like, they both look like they've got quite a high skill cap in terms of where they could be in the hands of a good player. I found playing against Boar really difficult. You know, you can one round Anvil in cover without any help. And I know there are some teams have some tech to deal with him, but I think with the release of Cooks, he's going to get even better with the +2 speed and then Vet Brisket for dodging him, potentially mark target. I mean, you're looking at what, like a 15-inch threat range on him?
Yeah.
And then, his personal damage output is so high, but then one of his team is also going to get that damage output, like Shank, who can also get +2 speed and mark target and damage target and berserk and charges for one with 2-inch melee. I think their threat output now is very, very high. Perhaps we'll see a resurgence of things like counter charge for Masons. Maybe that'll become more important and obviously a good meta pick for it, or Obelus to make him walk away. But yeah, I think Boar's perhaps a little bit overtuned in what he can do for the efficiency of the team. I mean, a 13 influence team when the captain only needs two and can still kill a 20 odd HP tough hide model on his own.
Do you find the influence? So the influence conversion to momentum is quite high, because that's like, I haven't played against him yet, but that appears to be one of the bigger issues from my point of view. It's just so, I can generate all the berserk and whatever, that they're just generating so much momentum that you can't even win turn. The tempo goes to them as well.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, if they're looking at 13 influence, and that's if they don't score, and suppose they spend 4 of those influence to translate that into threat extensions, or potentially even 5, 5 of those. But when those 8 influence then actually translates into 14 momentum, because you've got berserk of those, you're like, okay, well, I'm all right with that. And that their damage output is, the fact he's Boar's got combined results for damage and stagger and damage singled out and knockdown, low down. So he's got, so is it 2 hits, 1 damage singled out, or 1 damage stagger, 3 hits knockdown. He's likely to actually hit the charge, the 4 with the stagger. He actually kills, if he hits the 4 and the stagger, he reliably kills Mule as well from full health through reanimate with tough hide, etc.
No.
So Mule's the only model in the game that can potentially survive, I think, if he misses out on the charge. But that's it. And that output for 2 influence is dumb. And that's without his legendary. So, I mean, obviously players can play around his legendary and minimise the impact of it. But you're still, I think we worked it out roughly, the influence efficiency, they got up to about 21 influence, effectively, if only 2 models can charge.
All right. So
as you say, that translates into momentum, and therefore that rolls turn to turn, and therefore you've got 4 players dead easily.
Yeah, I'm fine with this.
Yeah. I feel like Steve's just signed up to the marketing department at Steamforged, because I feel like we've just sold at least another 100 units there.
I mean, obviously, Boar's weakness is, like, Order are a great counter to him. The high-tempo scoring, he struggles to hide the ball as well as some other teams. So he has got some counters, but you have to, I think, play really well, because Boar's entry-level kind of play is still much better than other teams. So the opposing player has to play significantly better to win that matchup.
Yeah, no, that's fair. So I guess that's probably a good point to ask Martin. Like, what are your experiences against Boar? I know you had the one game on stream, but have you played any other ones and feel like you can out-tempo how quickly he can damage you?
I've just played the one game against him, but I thought I looked a couple of games on Friday. Yeah, obviously he will hit you like a truck, but I think fight him teams, he's only 3-1 with 24 boxes. When you hit him on the wrong foot, I think someone like Hammer with +2 damage can kill him. Or you have to be very creative, like Steve said. And my only issue with Boreas, I think he's a great captain and an effective influence battery, because he brings 4 and just needs 2. And I think he would be fine if he was 2-2 like normal Bore. I think then he was pretty good. And as Steve said, then we are down to like 19 influence. That's pretty good as well.
Yeah, because so, at the moment, the way he operates on an optimal activation, if he gets his charge off, he's effectively running at 6 influence. So Furious Charge, Berserk, buy Berserk, buy Berserk. So, you know, for a 2 influence captain, that's ridiculously efficient.
With 2-inch melee as well, which I think is a big thing on him for that.
Yeah, crazy, crazy good. And then that 1 Guild Ball result and the 4 Guild Ball result just boost his efficiency like crazy. He's an insane captain. Lots of fun to play, but I think I don't like to agree with the Americans too much, but maybe Bots has got a point about Boar being up there amongst the best of captains at the moment.
Yeah, I think so. I think obviously the thing is, it's not just if it was just his threat, I think more teams would be able to deal with him. But the fact that he can turn players in his team with Berserk, and they have great playbook damage results anyway. It kind of increases their own efficiency each turn. He's a support captain as well as a melee beast himself.
Yeah, and I think we worked it out. I think it was Sunday evening at the dinner. You can fill up Boar, you can give Shank 4, you can give Gutter 4, then you can take one of the briskets for... what is it, quick time, right?
Yeah.
Yes. And then you could have got Meatook also for tooled up, and basically the mascot and one player didn't do anything, and everybody's doing something, a tooled up here, two very, very good squaddies going to hit you. You can obviously replace Veteran Gutter with Spoiler if you want to. And I think that's pretty good. You are in the middle of the game when the scrum is going. The Butchers can pretty outfight you pretty easy.
Yeah. And then if you put that other player as Tenderizer, who's a battery anyway, and then you take 4 damage, you score.
Yeah, absolutely.
We haven't really touched on Miners yet. And I know, obviously, since I won Vengeance, people are going, oh, Miners are broken. Looking at the spread of how they performed, though, over the course of Vengeance, doesn't really support that. I think they're a guild that reward placement and seeing turn to turn. So I think a bit like Fish, the way Martin plays Fish, in the fact that you have to pressure from one turn into the next, where you leave your players to reduce where they can kick out and where you're going to be able to retrieve the ball from. So like any other 3-0 team in that respect, that you have to do that. But you've also got to have a bit of foresight in how you can retrieve the ball, because they aren't the standard way of maybe getting the ball back.
Yeah, so like a spatial kind of awareness that you have to have from turn to turn.
Yeah, and I think their influence allocation is also very different to most teams. So generally, Shark would normally get like 6, but in my games, my captain only got 6 when he was going for a goal run himself, or it was to win the game to try and take someone out. His damage output isn't great.
No.
It was actually my other players that got majority of my influence in that way, and he did very little most of the game. Obviously, the legendary turns are pretty big one, and I think, you know, some of the games I've played Fisher, which allows me that extra repositioning, but you are bringing a model that has 20 hitboxes and is defense 2. R3 is nice, but any team that can do any kind of serious damage will just one round it. And it's very slow, so it's one of those things. It's a trade-off. It's also generally a 2 influence sink for no momentum return. It's just a reposition tool.
Yeah.
So I think the team's actually quite complicated to play well. You know, and the team, like when I played into Fraser, obviously his positioning was really good, and he could leverage that into turning that into damage, making me have to try and overcommit to get the ball back. You know, so I think that there are definitely lots of tools in the game to deal with it. And obviously Sharks Legendary is an example. They're all speed four. You know, it's pretty nice to shut them down.
Yeah, absolutely. So that actually is an interesting point. So I've played a little bit of Mines, and getting to them, you know, coming from an engineer's kind of background. And what I find the hardest to play against is actually like a high tempo team like a Shark, that can actually also shut you down or control you in some respects. So I find Sharks pretty hard. And then also, I know we've chatted about this, Steve, the Order. I actually find them, depending on the kick receive, they can be quite challenging just because they can compete so heavily on momentum / goal scoring or the tempo kind of game.
Yeah, I agree. I think like Obelus as well is another good pick into them.
Yeah.
Because obviously they've got medium to low defense, so his Puppet Master is super reliable in getting the ball back. And only one or two models can actually get into him reliably to try and get the ball.
Yeah.
Those models are fairly squishy compared to, you know, easy for a casket time, effectively. And he's got enough movement shenanigans of his own to reposition the ball off his own team. So if you have to commit to one side to try and get it, you can move the ball with Puppet Master and, you know, boot it to the other side. Dirge is a 10-inch move. I think they've got a lot of ways of, you know, killing the ball and basically stopping you scoring and outfighting you. I mean, even if he kicks, makes your player kick the ball behind your own line.
Yeah.
There's lots of tools in there, I think. I was quite fortunate in the teams that I played against that most of them didn't have that high tempo scoring game. And that was, as you say, that was the one that I was actually really worried about.
Yeah, that's the one I've probably mainly played against. And that's the one I worry about the most. So the Charles game was round five-ish. That you played against. So you played it. What was the score on the Friday night when you played him again?
I think it was like 12-2, 12-4 maybe.
Did you receive both times?
Both times I received. So normally Order have a fairly reliable 2-2 game on the board, but if you're only feeding the models like Mule, they can't take him out. You can actually use Fisher to, you know, once they start building a scrum to disrupt that and bring him back, and it's kind of then they've got all their players at wherever he was, and it's like, well, actually now he's not there and you're out of position for the rest of the table. Charles played the same 6-inch to me both times, and we did talk afterwards about whether Benny instead of Fangtooth would have been a good shout, because obviously four armor when they've actually got fairly low tack is pretty good.
Yeah.
And also his free counter attack.
Yeah,
and no knockdown, which is good for you know, stopping Fisher from being able to try and knock players down to make it a loose ball.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think I think as time goes on, people will find more ways of dealing with them. I don't think they're necessarily an easy team to pick up and do well with.
No, I think they've got a lot of character players, a lot of, like, you know, traits, things like that. There's a lot of depth to them.
They're a lot of fun, though. A lot of fun to play with. I think they quite suit my style, which was nice.
Yeah, my dream with them is to basically hostage someone's own player with Lodestone and just basically, like, get all their own players to go in, and that player hasn't activated yet, and then they're just locked in by their own players.
I haven't done that one yet. Yeah, that's an interesting one. I use it as a threat extension for goal, so I think in my game against the Butcher's player, Shaft couldn't get into goal range and get the ball, so I actually had to knock down Captain Boar and then Lodestone off of him to push myself into range to score.
That's fantastic, though. That's like such cool tech.
Doing that, being able to see that or is not an easy thing to kind of factor into your plan of how you're going to actually get the game over with, you know, because they are a team that want to win fairly quickly.
Who hurt you guys? That's what I want to know. I wonder whether, like, the start of every season or when we've got something new introduced to the game, like, I feel like we're in that learning phase, you know, relearning how the game works, learning new minor guilds, new captains, playable. People are always going to get caught by surprise to some extent because there's just not the reps into these things or with these things. You know, I've been listening to a few podcasts and reading stuff on Discord and on Gubs, and people are very quick to say something is overpowered or needs nerfing, rah, rah, rah. I just wonder whether we've got to give it a bit of time to shake out. But, you know, winning Vengeance with Minus, Steve, I think you've actually... You've done the job of the marketing department, so I would expect that Steamforge would be paying you at this point, right?
I'd like that. What I would say is, I think Martin will probably back this up, is people have probably forgotten how to play against 3-0 teams. Yeah. My experience, they were used to that 2-2 or that grindy game, maybe, you know, the Chicago meta spreading. And when you play a high-tempo football team, they were like, how do I actually kill the ball again? What do I do? How did you find it, Martin?
Yeah, I would totally agree, because it's the end of 3-3. There are basically these 2-2, even 1-4 or 0-6 teams. And now we have so many teams who can legit play 3-0, like Miners, Fishermen. The Order now can play legit 3-0, Engineers. And I think the game is faster. You can... Yeah, basically rush someone, and they are not prepared for this. And to come back to Miners, I think they are good. Obviously, the 2-inch placement is pretty good, but there are so many ways to deal with them. They have only one captain, one mascot. If you take one out or push him off the board, he needs a lot of time to come back. To be fair, my fish aren't afraid of them. Let's say I can score first at them. So what they're going to do, they can't play this, I score, you score, you score, I score, you score, because then I win 12-8. So they have to take two fish out. And there are a lot of ways of dealing this. And I don't like these, oh, this is too strong and this is too strong. I think that's wrong because of the way the game goes. Like, basically every shitty squatty can sink in a goal or two, and yeah, okay, he's not good, but he scored 2 goals for me, so you are now in trouble. So I don't like these gaps and discords, blah blah blah, this and this. And I think it's way too early to say this. What people forget is, oh, Steve Easton played Miners, oh, they are broken. But Steve Easton is a good player. Maybe he could have won with, let's say, Brewers.
Oh, so, I don't know. Steve, could you have won with Brewers, mate?
Yeah, he could.
Thanks, Martin. Okay, maybe. I mean, I think the point Martin's making is it's actually down to the player and the choices they make in the game.
Yeah, 100%.
And that differentiates all the good players. So the top 8 players that went through to day 2, most of those, I would have said at least 6 of those, I would have expected to have been there.
Oh. Yeah.
You know, and there was a few people that had some bad rounds early on, like Timmy and Henry, and they were playing Falconers. But I think, like, Henry would admittedly made some poor decisions, and so that was probably a fair outcome. And Timmy, again, like, had some maybe polarizing matchups. Also, when you get 2 good players playing each other, only one can win, as you say.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you look at Vengeance and you look at who you expect to go through to the second day undefeated, majority of those players were there.
Yeah. Is it, who took Timmy out again? Sorry?
Me.
Just checking. No, it's actually, it's an interesting point because it brings us around to another thing that we wanted to talk about, was actually the tier lists, because other podcasts, some people like to kind of define things, and that's cool. You know, that's how they want to roll. They want to kind of rank everything. But basically what I'm taking from what you guys have said, and it's an opinion that Dave and I kind of share as well, is that player skill ranks above, you know, guild kind of tier list or power. What are your thoughts on that?
Go first, Steve.
I would say, thanks, man. I'd say generally more talk to you. So for me, Farmers now probably one of the most well-rounded that have answers to every kind of aspect of the game. Huge yep. damage pools, reach, huge takeout potential, goal scoring threat, anti-conditions, in fact, the most anti-conditions in the game, anti-goal tech in Millstone. So I think, you know, I'm surprised people aren't doing better with them. And obviously Bryce is a fantastic player and I, you know, and he's been playing Farms a long time. But I'm surprised they're not a little bit more popular at the moment. I think there's a few other teams now that are super competitive in what they can bring. So that tempo. So for instance, Order reward high skill, like a, you know, a captain, a player that's really skilled in the game, being able to see what they can do with it. But and I think there are some teams that have perhaps a few less tools. So there is a, in a way a tier list, but captain, you know, the player using it can leverage different aspects of that and make that less impactful in the outcome of the game in general.
Yeah, no, fair. So the tier then is more a ranking of abilities or tools they can bring to the game than actually just raw power potentially.
I would say generally, yeah, because, you know, you've got some teams that reward. So Fish is an example. Fish now have three captains that have different, bring different things. So Corsair's obviously got a bit of a grindy takeout game in general, or he can still leverage some goals. So he can still play a 2-2 very easily, or even a 3-0. Shark is typically a 3-0 captain, and Yukai brings a different aspect to that. I know Martin was trying some push-off tech as well with the placements and stuff. But also that, you know, like Yukai's a pretty good counter to Boar probably with the placing him away.
Yep.
Whereas Shark can just score around. So it's how you see those tools that the team bring, how you pick your team and what you do with it in the game, where you position stuff. So that's what the game, that's what the best players in the game do. They look at the board position. They look at what the opponent's doing, where they can leverage different aspects of their team. Which is why things like Boar is scary in the hands of a really good player, because they can leverage his efficiency and damage output, you know, and that translates into actual points.
Yeah, absolutely. Martin, your thoughts on this?
My biggest problem with these tier lists is that, say, there was a tier list basically in the afternoon of March 1st when no one played a game, and it's like, this is strong, this is strong, this is not strong, this is too good, this is too bad, and calm down, let's try something out, let's play some games, and maybe you can drop a tier list at the 1st of April. So 4 weeks of gaming, some tournaments, see what good players are doing. And that's my problem with tier lists. I'm pretty close to some of the French guys, and the French have the problem. They are only playing what is strong in the tier lists, and the tier lists are made by, yeah, some podcasters, the internet, whatever. And what I've learned when I played the French, yeah, they're playing these good teams. They're playing Butchers and they are playing Blacksmiths, but I don't want to be impolite, but I'm... They have got only their one plan. They're doing this, and this, and when it isn't for this. And I think maybe when you are not looking at tier lists, play what you like and what you're comfortable with, I think you can get better results. And it's just my personal point of view. I just want to force you into my game. Doesn't matter which guild I'm going to play. And I think when you can do this to your opponent, it's not really important what your guild are playing, because they must play your game and you are better at this.
See, I take a lot from both of your positions. I strongly believe that, like, certain players have preferences towards a style of play. And you see that in personalities as well. So, you know, some players lean to that aggressive tempo style. Some people really like to play control. They gravitate towards guilds that reflect their personality to some extent, or guilds that they feel they can do well with. I've tried to play engineers, and it just doesn't click with me. Whereas I love to play a control style game where, you know, you can dictate the board and slowly grind out a win. Yeah, I agree with you, Martin. I think there's often a jump towards decision makings without any empirical basis for it, and that really bothers me. But beyond that, like, I really get frustrated because making a list of things and being declarative about it really shuts down creativity, you know. And I think anybody who is putting content out onto the internet kind of has a responsibility in a way, because players, new players to the game, you know, players who are at that kind of 2-2 level, and even top table players, it creates a reality. And I don't necessarily agree that that reality is always right, particularly at the start of a new season.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh,
is that another podcast calling someone?
No, that was my work. I'll phone him back in a minute.
Are you meant to be working? It's Sunday. Tell them it's Sunday.
No, I'm not meant to be working. That's why I'm phoning back in a minute.
That's all right. You can bill them for that. That's fine.
Yeah, I just wonder whether, you know, whether like, I get it. I get that people want to rank stuff, and I think you sort of saw at the end of season 4.0, Mort's Hunters pretty much at the top, probably because of the efficiency of those guilds, and particularly Hunters were too efficient, but that's more about, I guess, over-tuning certain models. Yeah, I don't know where I'm going with this, but I guess what I'm trying to say is, hold your horses, hold your fire.
Yeah, absolutely. Martin basically said it within, you know, until we've had a month and a little bit of data to actually look at the results. And then also, you know, people just working out what works for them and the counters to a lot of this. I mean, we've got, you know, 4 new captains, new minor guild. There's a lot to work out. Like, I remember seasons ago when, okay, Obulus has got Puppet Master, right? So there are a couple of ways around that. One's to make sure you sit behind something so you can't Puppet Master your model over it, or you just knock your own model down. Like, it's not great, but people start to create those ways of getting around it. And I think you need to wait and gain some time to understand, you know, what those tools are.
I like that idea that, sorry, Martin, you go.
One thing I'm thinking of the whole time is, let's say I'm playing a top guild. Doesn't matter what kind of player I am. And another guy I play into is playing low tier guild, and he beats me. And what does it say about me? I'm so shitty as a player that I can't beat him with the best tools, because he's such a great support that the tools that he uses aren't relevant for him. So I don't know if this tier list thing is really helping. Especially for new players, just pick a guild, try some games, look what models you like, and basically have some fun. The tier guild is good, I think, when it comes to a negative play experience, like Skarsa, maybe some guys are annoyed playing Skarsa, or Scalpel, she's pushing around things. And then you can say, oh, she's in a pretty good guild and it's a negative play experience, maybe we have to do something here. But for the status of the game, I think those tier lists are very, very close to irrelevant.
Yeah.
I would generally agree. I mean, the big question is, where do Steamforge want to balance the game, which they've never really kind of come down on? Because, you know, do you balance it for the masses? Do you balance it for entry level? Do you balance it for the top players? Can leverage different aspects, as Martin said, make you play their game, irrespective of what guild they're playing. And they then choose a guild to make you play a game that you maybe don't want to be playing into them. So it's an interesting point where, you know, how do Steamforge look at where the game needs to be? And as Martin says, you know, when players look at tier lists and go, well, this is OP. Well, it's not really. There is probably a definition between different guilds, but they are so close that, as he says, generally it doesn't matter. There was, you know, in the last a few months ago, we could have, before the Arise, we could have said that able to leverage Cena every turn with Midnight Offering and Scalpel every turn because of their damage output and the repositioning and how you could leverage that was too powerful. And just by changing Midnight Offering has obviously changed how those two players are now perceived and potentially how they're going to be used. But that was after some evidence of that. So as he says, I think we need to let things shake out, let people try stuff. And after playing Miners, and the reason I played Miners, by the way, was because I played so many games with Masons and Smiths that I wanted to play a faster tempo game. I didn't want to have all those grindy clock games. And I just thought they were fun to play. So, you know, I'm actually looking at order at the moment just because it's a lot of jank in there. A lot of stuff.
They've got all the jank. I should look at them from across the table and just go, oh my God, like two balls, not just one. I've got two balls I can play with here. This is fantastic. You know, when you've got Harry and then all the passes just essentially become momentum generators plus, you know, repositions. It's amazing.
When I watched Charles play against me and the stuff he was doing, he looked so happy playing the game in terms of what he could do in the game. And then I was just sitting across from him going, so Spigot's gone from there to, wow, to there.
Okay. Yeah.
And you've got momentum for doing all that. All right, then. Sounds good.
Yeah. No, we added a game the other night. There was a guy who's kind of relearning the game. And he's like, yeah, bring your order. I'll play them. No worries. And afterwards, after the game ended, there were a few kind of shots. I think it was pretty close. We realized that he had a potbelly pass snapshot on order. That he could have just put the potbelly pass straight into, like, missed it at a snapshot. And it would have been amazing. And the range the ball would have gone from Brisket to Fangy to then to Mist would have been, you know, most of the table. It's fantastic.
It's an interesting team to play again. It's like it's one of these things of how you spread your influence, how you see the turn unfolding because they do have an extra ball. You need to be able, you can leverage another player in to threaten. Whether you put anatomical from Pride, where you position stuff for that, or that pass. So. They're a lot of fun to play as well.
Yeah. I think one of the other big things I noticed was the fact that if you're – so I, as a miner – I'm not a miner. As a player of the miners, I like to receive. And with them, I'm like, yeah, kick to me, no worries. And they just pass around the ball of light and reposition and generate momentum. It's actually really hard to win turn one when the other team's got their own ball and they're just passing it around anyway.
It's also really hard to get the ball off them when they've got two balls to reposition.
Yes.
Because they are going to get five momentum very reliably with the ball zipping across the pitch. So they are a team that doesn't mind kicking or receiving. And whereas when I personally played the Miners, I found that I preferred to receive in that game because their ball threat or ball retrieval wasn't great because of their slow kicking, slow step off speed. And how many resources you had to spend to try and get the ball. You know, you're really looking for a ranged floored bolt to try and free it up or having to overcommit. So they're a team that personally I found much easier when I received. Mm. Whereas with order, I don't care.
Yeah, fair. I mean, I guess, and as soon as you've got that resource, I think that's another one is a team to watch. I honestly think that maybe they're kind of in the middle ground. My personal opinion, and I play a high tempo style game, I actually think they will be top shelf. I think people play them a bit more, work out how to leverage the ball a bit more with the resource and the movement. Their tempo is very high.
I agree. And I'm hoping that now that Scalpel and Scatter have perhaps, and the Bear scene has perhaps changed slightly, you might see a few more Mason back on the pitch. I think Scalpel was the reason I didn't take them to Belgium was I didn't think I could win the Scalpel matchup apart from on clock.
Yep.
And that's not a reliable win condition against a good opponent. So with Scalpel now only having the Midnight Offering once per game, I think there's potential for them to actually be able to compete into most stuff and perhaps be more competitive into things like Boar and other stuff which people may struggle with.
Absolutely. Hey, look, I just realised. So, Martin, I was just looking at Longshanks, and you've got the badge for Masons. Why didn't you take Masons, mate?
I basically didn't take Masons because I took them to Belgium. And Masons are good when they are getting the ball, keeping the ball. And I lost to Fraser and to Steve. And in both games, they got the ball. And they're obviously too good of a player to give me the ball. And I wasn't satisfied with my play without the ball. And I didn't saw a chance to practice enough to leverage this. So I took Fisherman because they don't care if they have the ball or not. They have a bajillion ways to get the ball. And I wanted to play more aggressive. So that's the only reason I was not taking Masons. I think they are still very good because what people every time underestimate, it's the most important thing of the game is decision making. Yeah. It's not like I play this, I play that, I have the ball, I kick, I receive. It's like, do you know how pool players practice between tournaments?
How?
They have an extra room with a pool table and their trainer putting them situations, like really crazy stuff. The balls are laying everywhere around. And it's like the green ball in the whatever pocket or something like this. They practice this decision making, and I think that's what you have to do when you want to be a good or great Guild Ball players, to see the board state and okay, I can do this or I can do this, and this is a decision making is this what makes the game interesting, and that what separate good from the normal, from the very, very top players.
Absolutely. All I got from that was that you like to play with balls more than the magic. which is fine. And that the German training technique is actually just going to pool halls. Is that essentially what you do? Because I like going to pool halls, but I generally just drink lots. So
maybe that's the point. Maybe like people go, okay, cool, this guild is strong because the decisions are easy. And you know, you can sort of map out trees quite easy. I don't know. I've always preferred guilds that have like high utility, and maybe that's the good thing about control guilds, because they are usually about having a suite of decision making tools available to you, and they can adapt to a lot of situations. Whereas, you know, you contrast that against like Sharkfish, for instance. You've got one plan. You've got very specialized tools to enable that plan, and it either goes off or it doesn't. I don't know. I mean, how do you feel about that as a proposition?
I would disagree. Shark has got the 3-0 plan, but when I'm in the drafting process before the game, I could do okay, maybe my plan isn't working, so I can pick up Jack or normal Siren to grab some players and shove them off the pitch, or there are a lot of players that Shark can kill with some crowd, or maybe veteran, maybe Sakana gave them weak point. You can do this, but I think it's the same with decision making. You have to make the decision when to do it. It's like playing Masons. You're always going for momentous two, but a good Mason player knows when to pick non-momentous three or non-momentous four, and that makes the difference, that you can change gear basically.
That's an interesting point. I like it. I think the fundamental point here is one of practice, right?
Yeah.
Like you're just not going to be able to make those decisions and then make them under clock pressure unless you've got the reps on.
I think that's also a different element though. So clock pressure is, especially like on stream games and stuff, because the decisions you make when you are running out of time, really you need to analyze those after a game, I think, because you need to understand why you're making those decisions. If you play an optimal game and you've got unlimited time, the game you'll play will be different to one when you're having to make decisions under pressure. And I think being able to look at why you've made those decisions, what factors you took into account, and then make adjustments from that moving forward is how you kind of grow in the game.
I totally agree, man. Like, we play a lot of sort of vassal tournaments in Australia, and we don't play on clock. And I've noticed that that's an issue, for me at least. you know, I'm kind of used to a rhythm now, whereas you've got some new guys who are learning. And the good thing for them is that they can take the time to, you know, work out what the optimal move is. But yeah, having that tournament condition, I think, is really important. And it also adds a really critical, like not just a win condition, but also like a skill vector to the game.
I think like when Mike and I played in Belgium, the first kind of probably the first whole turn took both of us less than 2 minutes. In general, you know, we're both very quick, but we do that specifically, and we change tempo throughout the game as we have to make different decisions. Because obviously, if you can apply early clock pressure to your opponent, it gives you an edge. You know, in the middle of the game, you'll potentially need more time because the decisions become more relevant to how the game pans out. And then obviously when you get to the close of the game, if you have one when you're running out of time, again, if you're ahead on clock, it gives you more flexibility to be able to analyze those decisions or what you need to do, whereas your opponent's going to have to be rushed. So, you know, when you see good players playing, you'll notice that their allocation and their first turn is generally very, very quick. Would you agree, Martin?
Yeah, I would totally agree. And this is another reason why I disagree with the Americans. They saying practice your first turn. I think the first turn is the most unimportant turn in the game because there is basically close to no interactions. I do my thing, he can do his thing. I just, let's say I've got the ball, I pass the ball around and look if I'm not into your threat range. That's all. And the other guy tries to make the goal run as hard as possible and to bring his miniatures into position, but there is basically no chance to fuck up, and that's why just play your first turn. Like Steve said, we need something like 2 minutes, and I think for practice it's maybe more interesting to let's say two guys play a game, they go and you are being thrown in this game and you take one guild and the other guy is taking the other guild, and then you have to play with the statue of the board and what you are given. I think this would be a great way to train the game and to get better.
It does rather turn the idea of tier lists on its head though, which you know, I feel we're drifting into dangerous territory here, talking about Guild Ball as a skill-based game.
It's all about it. We should just like roll off at the start of the game because I fucking missed another 2 4 dice shots this week.
We've got the king of dice rage here on the podcast right now. Yeah,
fair. Actually, he did comment about the 100% as GB. What was it? GB manager app says it's 100% shot. A 5 dice tap in is 100%. Fact.
Well, yeah. We played a game last night, and man, there was some bullshit dice. I mean, spikes as much as, you know, bad results. Because
I think, but that's Vassal dice. But obviously, the random number generator is slightly different. I mean, it ended up being like 22 dice, and I rolled 2 4s or something, or 3 4s, which is obviously way below average. But So one of the things that I think people forget is that when you're playing a fighting team, you have more opportunity for dice to be less impactful generally because you're making more attacks at the same thing. So yeah. if one spikes one way or the other, it generally isn't normally as important. Whereas when you're going for a goal run, if you miss that tackle, you miss that shot, that's obviously a binary effect of the fact that it's gone or it hasn't, and that's obviously cost you points and left you out of position. So when goal scoring teams do miss goals, they tend to have to work harder to recover their position. And normally the only player you were giving up anyway is the goal scoring player. So, you know, like when I played the Masons player, I scored and I then dodged my player behind his line. So he had to commit Hammer to go behind his own line to kill me, which is fine for me because Hammer's out of position for the next turn.
Yep.
So, you know, and so I'm leveraging a goal and a player for position and then threatening a second goal the next activation, you know, the next turn. And his main threat is out of position for that whole turn, effectively.
Yeah.
So it's how you leverage things. So if I missed that, he would have had the ball and the player, and you know, I'd been 2-0 down.
And the position at that point, because you're not 4 inches further back. Yeah, absolutely. And it's a yes or no binary proposition.
Yeah.
Yeah, and obviously you do all you can to make that in your favour, but you still miss 3, 4, 5 dive shots depending on what you're rolling and where from. You've got to factor into your game plan that you are going to miss some. So I think over the tournament, I missed maybe 3 shots.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
It's an interesting point. The thing that I found with miners is I feel like, yeah, you'll miss shots. You know, you've got long range kicks that are 3-8s, things like that, that if you're crowded, potentially you've got to take a 2-8 or... but they can generate enough shots that you can afford to miss one and still win a 3-0. Like, do you feel that's like still the case? I feel like Sharkfish plays a similar style. My aim is always to generate up to 4 shots such that 3 will win me the game.
Apart from against really good players, I think you don't have as much leniency. So there'll be players where if you miss a shot, that'd be the game over. Like, so, you know, if you're receiving, you can always guarantee the first goal pretty much.
Yeah.
And then depending on what team you're playing, you can leverage the second goal turn 2. And they're obviously taking out the player that you've given them. But it's where you get that third goal from that tends to normally be the problem goal. And if you get that opportunity and miss it, it's hard to then get another one again against a very good player.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it was the evening at day one on Vengeance. I talked to one of the German guys and I said, yeah, tomorrow would be hard, especially I made all my 12 goal shots today and I made 12 in a row, so I will miss a goal shot. That's basically for sure. And that's one of the downside playing a 3-0 team. I just can lose a game by the fact that my opponent is so good that he isn't giving me those 3 goal shots. I need 3 goal shots to win the game. And obviously, fighting team always can mop a player or two because how the game works. I have to give them 1 or 2 players, or they have the ball, or they can they get the engage. They will get their kills. But goal scoring teams, I played games where I had maybe 1 shot at goal, just 2. And it's just like Steve said, when you miss this shot, could be basically over after the first, because you know there are no more 3 shots on goal for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, which is what makes miners kind of interesting, I suppose, in that you know, like you can't kill the ball in the traditional sense. Like, you can't park it off to the back of the field after they've taken a shot and reliably not expect them to get it. Like that Fisher ability just to pull a ball from, you know, the other end of the pitch and then bring it back into play is really interesting, and sort of goes to what Steamforged are trying to do in making the game more goal scoring focused, rather than, you know, that traditional, you know, kill the ball 4-1 style.
But I think there are ways of still killing the ball. So, you know, every team have got models that can hide it well. So, you know, Farmers have got Jack Straw that can literally jump to the corner of the pitch with the ball on a 5-0 model with 2-inch melee, pretty hard to get it off. You've got models like Siren, Grayscales, Iron. Most teams have a model that they can put the ball on and maneuver with it, or place it in a position where you have to, even if you get the ball, you haven't got a goal shot from there, because it's so far away from the goal that you can't commit to that model and then get back into goal range. So there are ways of killing it. It's just being able to see that and set it up and play with that player effectively out of the pitch or out of the game while you're doing that.
Yeah, I just don't see a way that they're ever going to prevent, you know, that Chicago style of play. I don't think there's a way to get rid of it completely, but I like the fact that, I mean, I think we talked to maybe Perkins last year, talking about games of Guild Ball where there's a sense of constant danger, where the ball's active and it's in play and it's moving about, and the game then becomes about controlling the ball as much as, you know, getting to your win condition. I love that. I love that direction. I love that there's more interactivity in the game now through guilds like the Miners Guild. And, you know, even some of the stuff that the Navs do. And, you know, plays like Balls Gone or Rough Seas, where you can't just park it and not have any sort of sense of counterplay around it. I feel it's a good direction.
Yeah, yeah. I love the constant fear, like you're being chased by a clown. I like it.
I think an interesting way of putting it. I think that you're going to see more ball playing teams now, which is good for the game because it opens up a different skill level in terms of people now have kind of different ways of trying to achieve their outcome, and how you have to counter that depending on what you're playing against means there's more depth to the game, more kind of width as well. So I think that is the health of the game, as it were.
Yeah, absolutely. It's also a sense of game identity. I mean, essentially, we're playing medieval, you know, fantasy football, really. And if you're just running up and punching each other, and this is something Steve Forged have obviously focused on, then there's no point in playing football. And I think that's one of the draw cards of the game, is not just, you know, the fact that it's a miniature skirmish game, but also the fact that it ties into a game that is current in our world. And, you know, people have a love with that. So I think they, you know, obviously have identified that, you know, having the football as part of the game is, you know, crucial to the survival and longevity.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I liked one of our locals who said, man, it's not Guild hide the ball.
Fact. Did you hide the ball against him, Dave?
Look, I can't confirm or deny that.
No, fair.
I probably did.
So I reckon that brings us to, well, you know, rounds to an interesting point or a conversation in where do you guys feel the game's at? Because, you know, from my point of view, I think they've developed the game, you know, we're in season 4.1 or whatever it is. I like where the game's at. You know, starting with Steve, where do you feel the game's at? Are you happy with the game? What would you, you know, change if you could?
Overall, I'm pretty happy. I know there's obviously some new captains coming out. Has been out, but being forward, quite interesting. We'll see how they affect the balance of the game. You know, I like the fact they're now moving into a stage where they can errata more regularly, which I think is good.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that they'll use that because obviously having digital cards enables that. And I'm hoping that, you know, personally, I think there's a couple of things that perhaps a little bit too overtuned, but not hugely, you know. And I understand you've got to be careful when you kind of tweak stuff. But with the recent errata, you know, I could see all of them apart from like two changes I would have kind of think everyone would have pretty much agreed on. So I think the next step for them is how they look to continue the game's growth and whether they then look to do something like an active roster or an active duty roster system to enable certain players to be cycled in and out to keep seasons fresh. And obviously when they release new players, it can go into that active roster. So that way that people aren't invalidating their purchases. That might be an interesting way of keeping models in the game or growth of the game while being able to not have bloat in the rosters. So I think that's kind of the next step for them, is to work out how to achieve that.
Nice. Martin, your thoughts on season 4.1?
Yeah, I'm pretty happy as well. I think they have to errata the game a little bit more often, let's say maybe 2 times a year to keep things fresh and to satisfy the player, because obviously there will be something that is the best and obviously there will be something that is the worst. But when they bring this closer together, I think they're on a good way, especially with their app and the digital cards. And there are more nice things on the horizon, the new captains, the rookies will come. There are more minor guilds. And I agree with Steve, the main thing for Steamforge is to keep the game fresh, to make it a nice game, and to keep players involved. But I think they do it pretty good with all these community events. They are very, very nice. And I, from my point of view, I think there is no reason to change this.
Yeah, I think they're definitely like, they're nailing it, and they listen to the community. And that's something that, I mean, we've been involved in other games that other gaming systems don't necessarily do. And I think Steamforged are very good at that.
Yeah, and I think they have opportunities and chances to change the games as they like. Let's say they bring out tomorrow a new set of game plan cards, and it's a total different game. And they, or like the new captains, hey, look, here are new captains, and it's a total different game. And I think they have enough chances and enough ways of doing that. And I think they are aware of that, and they will do that.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I don't know. Dave, where do you think the game's at? I'm loving it at the moment.
Yeah, I'm really loving this idea of bringing new captains in to change guild play styles. I think that's actually the most impactful thing that they could do above and beyond just bringing new players into a guild. Like Steve touched on active duty rosters, and I think Matt Hart's talked about War Machine and the caster system. Like, the captain dictates the play ultimately, you know, as to whether you're playing like goal scoring, control, hybrid, whatever. Bringing new captains in is, we're going to see a completely different game by the end of these releases, and that is really exciting because now you're starting to talk about player preference as opposed to, you know, you've got two captains, one does this, one does that. You've actually got a spread, and you can pick one somewhere on the spectrum that most fits your playstyle.
Yeah, absolutely. And it becomes, once again, more about what we've talked about, the player skill and preference over everything else.
Yeah. Campbell, your thoughts?
Well, yeah, love it. Miners, all in. I love Jank. You know I love Jank. I love the ability that they have to just pull all kinds of shit from all angles and, you know, the repositions from everywhere. But I do feel like the game's in a pretty good spot. I would like to see the game plans changed. I think they're getting a little bit old. And not old in terms of...
like you and I.
Yeah, facts, yeah. they're not 40 yet. But I just feel like they could... You know, that's definitely a really key point that they can freshen the game up without actually changing the game too considerably. You know, don't touch the hair and stuff like that. But it's a really good point. It doesn't change guilds. But I'm sure we'll see that at some point. I'm sure we'll see, you know, the rest of the captains come out this year. I think it's really exciting. I think they've learned from their lessons in terms of, you know, having these hiatuses or these periods of no releases where I think they're starting to really, you know, throw stuff out there. Because just, you know, for the high-level players like, you know, yourself, David, Martin, and Steve, not myself, that, you know, like to just have something new out there that they can toy with and come up with new ideas. It stimulates the creativity. And that's, I think, you know, a massive positive within the game.
Gentlemen, do you have any closing thoughts? Anything you'd like to get off your liver?
I'm actually really looking forward to WTC this year. Team Scotland actually they only lost to each other or won the event at Vengeance, which is a really good result. And I think this year is going to be an interesting year with the releases coming out and obviously what's happening. And I'm glad to see more countries are taking part as well. So I'm really excited for the WTC.
Yeah.
It's going to be massive.
Martin?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to WTC again. I think this year it could be very, very interesting who comes in second. So a lot of teams that will have a good shot. No, just...
That's brilliant.
No, brutal. just kidding. I'm glad there are new countries coming. It's more like a big family event. It's so nice meeting, obviously, you guys when you come around, talking shit, having a good time. And WTC is the best event of Guild Ball in the year, I think. And I'm looking forward to this. And yeah, that's basically...
I could not agree more. Like, hands down, that was one of the best things I've ever done. Like, I have never seen that many fucking, you know, that many nerds in one place drinking to that level. Like, it was like they'd taken the Australian ethos, right, and just planted it in Poland and made the beer cheap and good. It was friggin' amazing.
That bartender wasn't happy about serving us all the... He was pretty grumpy. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't blame him.
Sorry. I was just going to say, I just wanted to point out that Martin is the sole reason why Timmy's still alive as well. He's like the godfather of the German meta. He just looks after them all. Yeah. So kudos to you. Maybe, you know, don't let him die next time. Just make sure he can't make it to the, like, you know, the start of the games. So at least the rest of the world has a chance, Martin.
No. I've known him for so long. I can't let him die after all these years. It was
a waste. Just maimed. Just, you know, so he can't participate. It's fine.
No, he was okay at Vengeance. It was 9 o'clock. He was not that drunk, and he said, "Okay, I'm going to bed now." And I said to my friend, "Oh, that was pretty easy. It's just 9 o'clock, and he's done. So perfect day." So Vengeance was basically a boring event when it comes to Timmy craziness. He did nothing.
He forgot shot.
He did
shot.
Yes, shot ball. One game of shot ball is basically nothing for Timmy.
Yeah. That's a nightcap.
If you guys haven't seen, there was 18 shot glasses when they decided that they couldn't have any more booze on the table.
Jeez, I need to witness it. W2C, we're going to witness this, and I'm not a participant. Thanks.
Man, can't wait. I'm excited for Belgium. I reckon I'll get there. Odds are on.
Yeah. I think you can fundamentally survive on beer and chocolate for at least 2 weeks. So, you know, what's a couple of days?
Challenge accepted, mate. Well, gentlemen, thank you very much. That was an interesting chat. Lots of ideas there. Hopefully we haven't pissed off anybody. But if we have, well, what's new? so thank you.
Always a pleasure.
Yes.
Yeah, you guys are legends. Thank you very much for coming on. Have a good Sunday afternoon. Welcome back. That was nice. I hope you enjoyed that little chat we had. Martin and Beaston are great blokes. They're also top shelf players, so it's always good to get interesting angles from people in different matters, especially the German one, which we all know is quite different to a lot of the rest of the world. So massive thanks to them. Also like to thank our sponsor, Mr. Jesse Heiss from freecitygames.com. He's been really doing a lot for the community, giving vouchers for the store, price support, and also just getting out the new captains as they've come out, the miners. I know because my addiction is real, he got the miners to me very quickly. So, yeah, if you want any toys and you're in Australia or New Zealand probably, freecitygames.com and use the code DoubleDodge10 and you get 10% discount. Also like to shout out Daniel Tacken. I played this bloke the other day. We had a great game, top bloke, and he's become a subscriber to our Patreon. So it'd be great to get more Patreon, obviously, but he's one of those people who's just decided to throw his money away on some Double Dodge support. And so we sent him out a whole bunch of stuff. So thanks again, Daniel. And for anyone else wanting to jump on the Patreon just to help us out, because obviously this isn't free. What we do is very time-consuming. If you go to patreon.com/doubledodge, we've got a few different levels of support there. Anything is helpful and would, you know, it helps us basically pay for hosting and other stuff and then buy more of the dice and other bits and pieces and prizes that we then give out at tournaments as well. So jump on that. Other than that, thanks for listening. We hope to get another episode out late this week. But we will see what kind of happens. So, see you later.
Yep.